"Why is your father so set against the sea for you, Wally? He's a seaman himself."
"That's just why. There's nothing in it, he says. I'm to study for the law, or the church, and then look for preferment. Kate Ashley's a cousin of father's, and she has the Queen's ear and will speak for me."
"Well, no doubt that'd be a steady safe thing to be. But you'd be wasted as a clerk, lad."
"Maybe. Still, learning can do you no harm. Anyway, I can't be a sailor like Humphrey. I'm always sick at sea. Nights like this are all very well. And oh, but I've a mind to see the Indies and all that vast country beyond them."
"Ah, it's fair enough, some of it. And rich, too. But you ain't so welcome there as you was in my young days. Thick with Spaniards, and the Indians, so savage with the treatment they've had that they're waiting behind every tree to put a poisoned arrow through your guts."
"They'll all be wiped out soon enough. Remember what you were telling me the other night?"
"About the thousands that were driven into the silver mines and never came out again. Yeah, I dare say you're right. Still, anybody that sets foot in that confinement from now on will have to fight every step, I'm thinking."
They both fell silent, the old man thinking of the far countries that had held no romance for him, that had been places where one was hungry or thirsty or in danger, and the boy thinking of the far countries too, but as places that drew him, as inexplicably as a magnet draws a needle. He knew that Harkes would mock at his thoughts, could he know them. Harkey said that 4,000 slaves were driven into a silver mine, but he didn't see them in his mind's eye. He couldn't see in that driving the gesture of the conqueror. He didn't see the silver delved for by dark slaves from the dark earth, pouring its silver stream into the treasure galleons that sailed with it stately into Cadiz. He didn't want Harkey to think like that. Enough for him to supply the fact and to leave the image unsullied by his thoughts. And in Harkes's simplicity and realism may have lain the secret of the enormous influence of his casual words upon young Raleigh's life. Presently, the dark hulk of a ship loomed up. Harkes took his oars again, and they drew alongside carefully. The wine, in its roped casks, was stowed neatly in the bottom of the boat. Money changed hands. A few sentences were spoken in the smuggler's peculiar tongue that was neither French nor English, and Raleigh and Harkes began pulling for the shore. They spoke little, for the laden boat demanded all their care and strength. Once Harkes spoke, but only to say,
"Second cave, Wally."
Within about 100 yards of the shore, Raleigh halted his oars and turned his head, listening. Harkes stopped rowing and said quietly,
"What is it?"
"Somebody's at the cave, if I'm not mistaken. Can you hear anything?"
"Hearing's not what it was. But there was a light. God's breath. It's that Trebor. He's been on the watch for weeks. We can't land, Wally. We must pull round the point and hope to get it all under cover at Mother Shale's before morning. If we don't, you will have the pleasure of the sight of me in the stocks. As for you, your father had..."
"Flay me," said Raleigh.
Already there was a hint of coming light in the sky to the east, and they bent their backs, working the oars like slaves in the galleys. To get round the point was always a hard task. Currents met there, and at intervals a swirl of frothy water betrayed the presence of hidden rocks. By the time they were round, they could see each other. They had both discarded all clothes but their breeches, and the sweat was running off them in streams. Once round, however, they were out of sight of whoever had been watching the cave, and stood a reasonable chance of retaining both their cargo and their liberty. Mother Shales stood in a dip in the cliff, sheltered from view on all sides except that facing the sea. It was a long, low, rambling building, which could be alehouse, farm, smuggler's rendezvous, or brothel, according to...